Hello and welcome to Equine Voices Podcast. My name is Ronnie, an intuitive equine communicator. I hope you enjoy this episode and thank you for listening. Hi everybody, my name is Ronnie from Equine Voices and I'm very, very excited and pleased to do an interview with Douglas Jones, who is a freelance equine coach and trainer. And we met at KISO, a summer horse camp that I was very honoured and looking to work at. And that's where we met. I'm going to bring Doug in and then we can chat more about that as we go along. Hi, Doug, and welcome.
Hi.
Yeah. Okay. I was going to tell the viewers that you've just woke up, but I'll keep that between ourselves.
Okay. It's only because I've been working a lot lately.
Because you've been very, very busy. So, Doug, would you explain to people that don't know who you are a little bit about you, what it is you do and where you are today, and then we'll talk about how you got there. We'll talk a little bit about your past and how you got into horses.
So I work freelance training in all three disciplines, dressage, show jumping and cross country. Have done for a long time now. I tend to teach private clients and riding clubs and pony clubs, teams and things. I love working with people that just feel a sense of achievement with anything, right? Small progress is brilliant. Big progress is amazing. So I like positive training and kindness to horse and rider. I love the psychology of teaching, especially with horses and riders, because you have to match the psychology of the horse to the rider and how they influence each other, which fascinates me every time I teach.
When you talk about the psychology, so you have your potential client and yeah, they have their horse already, or perhaps they're looking for a horse. What is it that you're starting to look at first?
So I think people underestimate how much they influence their horses. Just their thoughts and the way you think about things influences the horses. So when I first meet people, it tends to be either at a riding camp or I've been recommended to them. And I have often specialised in difficult horses. I don't believe there are difficult horses. I believe there's sometimes incompatible combinations or ones that haven't learnt to understand each other yet. So I go in with an attitude of, I don't really want to know what the horse has done because I don't want preconceived ideas. If there's something they're scared of, then obviously I need to know those sort of things. But generally, if I get a horse for training, I want to know what they want from it. It is a horse and rider combination. I want to know what they've done before and what they'd like to do. And then, as you know, I then sort of push them a bit further than that bit. The thing that fascinates me the most is how you get in a group session, six riders to do the same thing or six different horses who all learn in a different way. Because every person I teach, I have to teach slightly differently. Every horse I teach, I have to teach slightly differently. Same ethos, same sort of base layer, but there may be little quirks specific to them that you have to get past. And I think in recent years, I've become even more empathetic with people because of problems I've had myself in other areas of my life. And I love helping people. Like, if it's the fact that they can get on their horse and just walk around the school, brilliant. That's what they want to do and have their achievement. If it's they get to a national championships, that's brilliant. It's just, it doesn't matter what people want to achieve, it's helping them get there.
It's seeing the partnership develop. And that's a real skill. Yeah. You know, I'm going to say this, so I'm going to embarrass you anyway. You've got the biggest heart and you generally want to see your clients, but also the horses experience it in a positive way. And from what I've seen of you, you go that extra mile and you listen to them, but you also listen to the horse. And sometimes if the clients want to do something, but you see something in the horse that's not ready, you will tell them. You don't have a problem in telling them.
Yeah.
You give them something else that they can achieve.
My philosophy is I will push you past what you thought you're capable of, but not past your capabilities. So I will never ask someone to do something I know they can't do, because confidence takes seconds to destroy and then to rebuild confidence takes years. I haven't had that issue with horses generally. Mine came from, I work as a singer as well. I had growths on my vocal cords, which caused me to lose my voice and I had to have an operation. And I avoided singing lesson, working as a singer, any sort of singing I avoided because my confidence had gone. Now, 7 years on, I'm still not quite there. And yet, if you hear me sing on stage, you'd say you're a really confident person. So I like to make sure that people, horses and riders, individually and as a combination, just build slowly and achieve a little bit extra each time. And it's okay to take a step back. If you are ready to go up a level, but then you get there and you think, no, I'm not ready, go back down and be solid and strong at the level four and then work on that. I don't think anyone needs to be pushed past what they're able to do.
And sorry, Doug.
The one thing I don't like a lot in the equestrian industry is people being nice to your face and saying, oh, things behind your back, because they don't think you're doing the right thing with your horse or this, that, and the other. And I would say, you know, Mary, who goes down to see her pony once a day, brings it in, grooms it, and puts it back in the field, horse is still well cared for. You don't know that Mary's got that half an hour and that's her escape from a horrible life she hates. Be kind, you know, support people. And that's the bit I don't like about the equestrian industry, is that sort of slight backstabbing thing that goes on. I think it's got better. I think people are much better than they used to be 10 years ago.
And there'll be different places. I mean, there'll be some places that you go to and it can sometimes be a little bit clicky and people are afraid to do or say something with the fear of being laughed at or judged. And then there are other places that you go to and you get lots and lots of support and it's different levels. And like you said,
yeah,
if you're coaching somebody and they get on their horse and just go down the lane or they just potter around the field and that's something that they haven't done for a long time.
Yeah.
Or even sat on the horse.
Yeah. That very thing at camp at Milton Keynes 2 years ago, well, just before COVID. And I saw the horse with a different rider on it in the morning. Nevertheless, well, that's the smart horse. And then they came and said she was in my lesson of the afternoon, but she wanted to have a private session rather than having a group session because she couldn't ride a horse. I said, but I saw her on it this morning. They went, no, that wasn't her. So she came in, brought the horse in, and basically she's been terrified to get on her. And no one's taken the time to understand why. So I said to her, all I want you to do is stand on the mountain block and lean on your horse. Don't have to get on it. Just stay there. And we chatted. And turns out she was having a really hard time in her personal life and her business life. And when that happened, she felt unable to ride. And it was that. And then suddenly she got on the horse and walked around the arena. I think you have to take time to understand why someone's blocked. You know, and often I don't know initially. And then when I find out later about something, it's completely apparent as to why they could do that thing at that time. You know, another lady, she won't mind me saying because I'm so proud of her, Paula Jays, who is a lovely, lovely person. She had a horse called Lady, and she will tell you she used to frustrate the hell out of me because she's so capable. And she'd come into the tiniest show jumping around and stop at every fence. And the horse would step over the fence, literally step over the fence. And then we had a good session. And so she came for a private lesson the next week. And she jumped straight around, of course, with a wall. She hated jumping walls. And she just jumped clear. And I found out after that she'd been caring for her mother. And the stress of that. I said, without realizing it, that part of your psychology is stopping you doing something, which means you could not look after your mother.
Yeah.
And her mama passed away, and suddenly she was free to do her stuff. Yeah. That's why I always like to try and find out a little bit about them and find out, is there other reasons as to why they're blocking being able to do things they can do? Often it's something that is nothing to do with you or your horse.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I can appreciate that.
So with me, I had a breakdown years ago. Lots of things, my health and work and all sorts of things were going wrong. And I thought, I don't know why anyone would want to use me as a trainer. I can't do this, can't do that. And it took someone to take time to talk to me and believe in me. And it gave me a lovely horse to back. And suddenly my confidence started building again because people started to say, oh, that horse is going really well. And someone else bought me a horse. So my confidence was shattered through something which had nothing to do with my career, but I didn't relate it at the time. But now I understand that that often happens. I think lots of people use their horse as their leisure time. Mine's like my work mostly. But when you think, right, I'm going to go and have a ride, and you have a horrible day, and then you have a horrible ride, just because you're not in the right frame of mind to have a nice ride, and your horse picks up on all those things during the day. So often I think, well, on the days where you have a rubbish day, go and take your horse for a quiet hack. Don't work it, because you're not in the right place. And you'll think you are, because it's well, that's work and this is my horse. Mm-hmm. But your mind doesn't let go of the day, and your horse picks up all the tensions on it. So all those sort of things fascinate me. And a lot of people don't realize how much their other life affects their horses, even handling.
Absolutely. From my perspective, even if you're not handling, just being around your horse, you know, if you're giving off sparks, which is what it feels like sometimes, you know, they'll do what they need to do. And then if they can get away, they'll just go and graze. And sometimes they'll look at you. If you notice it, they'll give you a look. And it's almost like, you know, do you see what I see? Or can you feel that? And sometimes they'll go, what are you looking at? Well, you know, I'm just grooming you, but you might be a bit more firmer than you need to be. It's not always when it's a bad thing as well. It's not always when it's really heavy. It can be that your head is just full of thoughts and there's so much going on that what they want you to do is go, you're with me for half an hour, whatever it is, because this is important to you as well as to me. Just balance, just chill, just be in that moment. Like you said, you can go down once a day, whatever you're able to do. But be present with your horse and go off because you feel better too.
And I don't think, you know, a lot of people, I think some trainers have a philosophy, their horse has to work hard. As you know, to be able to train, your horse have to work it hard. You don't. Horses mentally tire so, well, you'll know this, they mentally tire so quickly. When they learn something new, they're exhausted in 10 minutes. And if you've done a good 10 minutes, stop. They don't. Yeah. Quite frankly, I'm too lazy to keep going nowadays. I'm getting old. But, you know, keep things like short and sweet and constructive, and your horse is more likely to stay with you. When I see people going over and it's not going right, I just say, just go walk away from it for 10 minutes. Go and do something else and come back to it. Because it's like the whole thing of my horse always stops at fences. Don't say my horse always stops the fence. My horse is going to jump the fence today. So I like to try and change the way people think about how they ride. Because I think British people especially are very negative. We're very micromanage. We want to manage every little step the horse takes. You know, when you're jumping, you want to manage every stride. You can't do it. I'm guilty of it myself. I have to really force myself not to micromanage everything. But if we can get people to sort of think, right, the horse first has to be a horse and our friend, and then the partnership is always better. And it'll also be a horse, keeping it short and sweet, and giving yourself achievable goals, especially when you're not on your own, I think it's really important as well. You know, the achievable goal is I got on the horse and rode around the arena for 10 minutes before it got dark in the winter. That's achievable. Right. Yes. And today we're going to learn half pass. And then get frustrated, and then you haven't had a constructive session at all for either of you. And you'll get them next time, remembering that session. Progression all the way through. Like every session is progression as well with me. So if I'm training a horse, I take everything very, very slowly to start with. So I'm just back in some young horses. I'm living in Ireland now. And everything's taking you longer. But we're doing everything on the floor. I've got one called Jo, who is a diva. She big panic about everything the first time she does it, and then the second time she has a small panic, and the third time she goes, well, I don't know what your problem is, I'm fine. And because I don't care what she does, I let her walk at everything. You know, she walks up and down steps, she over poles, over jumps, out around the lanes in hands. Now I'm on her, riding her, she's brilliant. You know, I've been riding her about 4 weeks now, and she's already going really well. Top poles, through jump wings, out around the field a little bit, it's really been pleased there, but because we do everything slowly, but make sure that each day progresses from the day before.
So you just said that you're in Ireland now. So is that where you're based?
Yes, I live just near Waterford in the south coast of Ireland.
Yeah.
So I came here officially and came here a year ago. And I was here during the lockdowns because my mum wasn't very well. And then my dad suddenly passed away in January. So I decided to stay here with my mum. And it's beautiful. So beautiful. We're right by the coast. There's long riding horses on the beach this morning. Very different from the UK in terms of less of everything, but more open space. So I had a 20-year business in the UK. Now I'm having to rebuild it again.
Yeah.
But it's lovely.
And you told me something that I didn't know. You used to be an accountant.
Yes, I used to be an accountant and corporate financial underwriter. And I managed directors and officers renewable for financial services for AIG. Hated it, but I was good at it. And I found out whilst on holiday my dad had cancer. Came home, handed my notice in left. And we came over to Kiso when Mia Palace Clark had it. And from her business work, because she'd broken a leg. And I came for 6 weeks and I left 2.5 years later. I'm freelance ever since then.
So was Kiso a big push to do more in the horse world?
Well, the reason I'd gone into the financial stuff was mum and dad have always been really supportive. I'm not from a horse background. Like, that's as close as my mum's got to a horse there. I've got one photo of my mum holding a horse and one of her holding a pony in, I did now 30, nearly 40 years, something maybe. And twice mum's held a horse. They're so supportive, mum and dad. But they always said, have backup plan. So if something goes wrong and you can't earn money from your horses, you've got another string to your bow.
Yeah.
So I did a business degree as well. And then in 2002, I had a big accident. Remember all the horses that were somersaulting in cross country?
Okay, yes.
Felix died. And well, there were 7 somersaults and 2 survives, and I was one. My horse hit a corner on top of the hill at Bishop Burton, somersaulted. And luckily, because he hit the corner, he went that way and I went that way. So I smashed my shoulder, the shoulder sort of down there somewhere. And I lay on the ground and went, I know it doesn't hurt yet, but I know I can't move. Don't cut my boots off. My brand new boots, don't cut them off. And I lost my horse from it. He broke his neck, essentially, and was put down a few months later after we tried really hard to get him right. It's an amazing horse. Another one that no one else wanted. Quite dangerous with other people, but in me, he was great. And I gave up. I didn't want to do it anymore. I think losing him, he was the most awesome horse I've ever sat on cross country. And I didn't have the heart to do it. So I was moving in with my boyfriend at the time in Birmingham and just got a temp job. And then they were like, oh, I'm quite good at this, and promoted me. Did that for 2.5 years, and then I realized I really didn't want to be in the city, being outside. And I love working face to face with people. You know, I love developing relationships. I love being phoned up to ask, what do you think of this? Or can I send you a little snippet of video? Or this happened today. I feel really proud of people when they achieve something, like almost more than I do of myself.
It's your passion. It's something that makes you glow and it makes you feel good, not on an ego place, but it makes you feel good because you know what that feels like to achieve something.
Yeah.
To give that to somebody else, encouragement.
Yeah. And like someone has helped me, you know, that day when you said that thing. And we often see things that we say as insignificant, but to someone else, they can be so important. So like you messaged me, the first time you messaged me, and said, I need to tell you something. You've been coming to my mind. That day was really important to me. I needed to hear those things. And
You talk about what you want to do. If you want to stop, that's fine.
Yeah. So I was having a really hard time. Around when I had my breakdown, and when you sent me the message, it made me positive again.
But that was you that did that, darling. That was you.
But you were the catalyst for it that day. Like, it was amazing. And I love that. Sorry.
No, it's fine. Don't apologise. It's absolutely fine.
You listen to me, I will cry quite a lot. So when I had my breakdown, I thought, why would anyone use me as a trainer? Why didn't? And then as I was sort of getting confident again, suddenly I started getting messages off people. And there was no real prompting for it. I don't know why. And I think had I had them at the time I was going through my really hard time, I would have just ignored them. But lovely message from people saying, like, the one lesson that they had with me in cross country on how to jump a skinny changed the way they rode cross country, and they won the next cross country. My philosophy on teaching them horses cross country is to walk them everything. Because if they can understand how to do it and walk, they'll be able to do it and canter. If you canter them first and they scare them, then you've already created an issue. And people have messaged me and said, because of that, I did that with my next horse and with great cross country, whereas they couldn't jump a ditch before. So I like to tell people that. And it's so nice as a trainer to get that feedback from people, because people, I don't think, often say it when you're a lesson. Facebook is great, but to actually get a message from someone to say, that thing you did helped me, is amazing. That gives me a real sense of achievement.
Yeah. Brilliant. And so it should. I'm just going to let you compose yourself and get a drink of water. And I'm just going to put on, there's some people. So Angie Griggs, Doug is an amazing instructor. I miss you so much. You give so much confidence in your lessons.
Yes, Angie. Well, I'm very frustrated.
Frustrating people. I'm so that person. Bless her. And
Angela Griggs is the only person I've ever taught who's managed to roly-poly backwards off a horse unintentionally. So ask me how she did it.
Oh, I do. We'll have to hear about that one. So there's Sharon. She says she misses you, Doug. So you've got a lot of people that are glad that you're still around. And so
I just check one there, I have to say. But it's like, for me now, I think this is the right choice to be here.
Yeah. And life takes you in different directions. And sometimes, especially when things have happened, it gives you a chance to see what you want to do, and you definitely want to be around horses and work with horses. And just because it's not the same as in the UK at the minute where you are, that's maybe because where you're going is slightly different.
Yeah, I think it is. It's not that I'm getting lazier, I'm getting older. I can't work as hard as I used to. I used to work 7 days a week and gig 4 nights a week. And I did that for like 10 years. And it's exhausting. Exhausting. And so I just done, like, I come to do a lesson, someone say, are you wearing glitter? I'm like, yeah. Or I turn up to do a gig smelling of horses.
So do you want to explain to people what your other work is? Because tonight you're doing on a gig, aren't you? So not everybody could be aware of what you do.
So at the same time as I quit the job in the financial sector, I'd been working as a singer anyway. And the girls at work dared me for the work's Christmas party to go in drag, fancy dress. So the first year it was 70s theme. So I went in a equine flared outfit with a blonde wig about here. And I won the prize. And the second year I went to the masquerade ball in a gold ball gown that was 10 meters around the skirt and only I could fit in the lift. And a 2-foot-high pink beehive. And it was an amazing costume made by my really good friend, Raven DeBarry, who makes period drama costumes. So corseted. And I was a bit heavier than I am now. And it pushed everything up. So I looked like I had these enormous boobs. And all the boys at work thought I hadn't done in the time between leaving work at 5 and going to the party at 7. Clever straight boys. and then a friend of mine asked if I would do a double act. Because he'd been a drag artist in Grampian area and wanted to get back into doing it. And so I said, yes. And my job was to sing and his was to be funny. And then suddenly they asked to start doing separate shows as well. And suddenly I had to be funny as well. I still don't think I am, but I know that the show is quite funny. So it's I love performing. Again, same thing for me. It's if someone enjoys the night, I've done a good night.
Well, I've only ever seen you. It was the Christmas party at Kiso. I can't remember what dress you had on, but I was like, oh my God, look at those legs. Yeah. And you had the most amazing on legs.
I do have leg envy.
And the shoes as well. It was like, holy Moses, this guy's tall.
As I would say on stage, none of my heels are below 6 inches. And my mother said, never go left. So I was sticking it in every aspect of my life.
But it was, I loved it because I didn't know what to expect. I mean, I knew that you did drag, but I didn't know what your voice really sounded like. And when you started singing, you belted out this tune. It's like, oh my God, he's got lungs on him as well. is there anything this guy can't do?
I'm lucky I get to do my two passions of my job.
Yeah. Seeing those toe size of you, and then I think that was before you had your breakdown. And I thought, my God, this guy is so passionate. He's so talented. He comes out and he's got this aura, this glow about him. And then that happens. And it was like, crikey. So it can happen to anybody. I mean, you know, we're good at hiding things and we sometimes use our outwardness as a mask.
I think as well, I'm a helper. I love helping people. Say I needed help. Still went hard now.
Yeah.
Like, or to say I'm not okay today.
Yeah.
I've learned to do it. Because I don't ever want to go back. I coped for years and years and years with lots of different things that happened until I didn't cope. And you don't notice it. I thought I heard it really well. There was a network of people all phoning each other. But I didn't want to burden people. You're not burdening your friends. And I think now I would say, I've had a bit of a rubbish day. I'm having a good day. I'm okay. So when people ask you how you are, I actually tell them, which sometimes they don't want to hear, but
yeah,
people shouldn't be afraid to say how they are. And it's really hard sometimes. But when you say how you are, it makes it less seem less.
I think sometimes people don't know how to respond to that. Some people don't know what to say. And sometimes you don't want to chat or you don't want to interact. You just want them to know, do you know what? This is how I'm feeling today. And me said to you, okay, I see that. I'll give you space, but I'm here if you need me. That's all they need to say sometimes.
Yeah, and I think as well, a lot of time, with men especially, I think, and the horse industry, with tough people, you know, we all get back up and get on again.
That's oh, you do. Had,
but we don't say, actually, could you just help me with that? You know, can you help me get back up? Can you not make me ride today? Because it can be anything in your life. I think that it's okay not to be okay.
Yeah.
You can't be okay all the time.
No.
But when people go to help, it's so hard to need help. And you do think you're hiding it really well. And everyone knew I was ill. I was ill as well. I had health problems as well. But I just didn't tell anyone. So I went down to under 11 stone in weight. And I'm 6'3". It's not healthy. I was near death's door at one point. But I've got amazing family, amazing friends who never gave up on me. And they pulled me through it.
There's a lot of love out there for you, Doug, because of what you do, but because you're a nice person. And yeah, there's a lot of love out there for you. Right, let's go back a bit. So you didn't come from a horse background. So who was the first horse and how did you get introduced to the horse? I know a little bit, but for the people that don't know.
So my dad was a lecturer in mechanical engineering and my mum's housewife and had various other jobs. And I'm from a really big family. Like, mum was one of 14 children and I'm one of four. And they bought a house just as the recession hit in the 80s. All the things went wrong and we didn't have any spare money. So the first time I remember a horse, I think he was called Polo because our grandma told him that he was called Polo. He was a little white pony by the canal in Carnforth in Lancashire, near where my grandparents lived. And we used to go and give him a Polo. I think it's called Polo. Then we went on holiday and I remember it was a posh holiday. So we went to a chalet park. We didn't just go camping. And there was a ride school on the chalet park. And I begged every day, I was 5 years old, to go for riding lessons. And no one knows why, because no one else in my family rides. So I'm one of 40 in my generation. I'm the only one that rides. So I begged every day. And then somehow mum got the money together and So me, my older brother, and my younger sister all went for lessons. I loved it. They hated it. Both their ponies lay down in the middle of the arena. There's a pony television, what were you thinking? And then for my sixth birthday, I started riding. Wesley's Riding School, which was in Swindon. And I used to go every Saturday and carry enormous bales of hay. Mum said she'd seen me like 6 years old carrying like bales of hay on this down the yard whilst the girls sat in the corner smoking. And so I'd have a lesson and then work and have another lesson at the end of the day. And then I begged, borrowed, stole every pony going. Every pony that no one would ride, I would. And got good results from it. And looking back now, the knowledge I've got now, I probably had problems or soreness somewhere. And we were just like, just get on it and ride. But it gave me a really good education because I was constantly having to learn how to get the best from each horse. So I did that and I did some carriage driving for a while. I think I was 12. I won the driving trial. With a 34-inch high Shetland pony called Wink. Then I went to Lacking College in Wiltshire, which is now Wiltshire College Agriculture, for 2 years and did my AI and business course, and then went and did a degree in business and equestrian studies at Bishop Burton College up in Yorkshire. And in my year out, I taught at Moulton College in Northamptonshire. And then had my little bit where I ran dressage yards, I ran show jumping yard, then had my accident and quit for a short while. And coming back across to Kiso, because my 6 weeks turned into nearly 20 years living down the road in Kiso.
Wow. That's a beautiful area, isn't it, around there? Absolutely gorgeous.
For me as a freelance person, really great, because I was on the border of Beds, Bucks, Cambridgeshire, Northamptonshire, Hertfordshire, and I taught for a lot of different clubs and places that most people wouldn't have got a chance to.
Yeah. I'm just looking at the time because Doug's got a gig on tonight, so we're just watching the time. What I'm going to ask is, when you had your accident, how did you get over that initial getting back on a horse? I mean, that's a big thing to get over.
I don't remember the accident itself. I know it was my fault. I know it was completely my fault. It was a horse that you had to let him do his thing. You know, he would jump anything you pointed it at, but if you interfered with him, he was cross.
I've just got, because you taught me well. That's what just come through. It's because you taught me well.
He was bred by Bishop Burton College, and he was there in my first year, but none of us were with me. He just backed at the time. And then when I came back from a year out, he was there again. I had offered him to me in my year out to take with me, and I sat on him and was like, no, don't like him. And then basically, he just put anyone that rode him in hospital quite quickly. He jumped another horse with a rider on it because he was annoyed that he was underworth of the arena. And so he just took off across the school. The horse got in the way, so he just jumped it. And that was down at Merrisworth College with a fellow BHS riding him. And the director at Equine said, get that off my yard. I don't want it here. He went back to college and dumped everybody that was sat on him. Then one of the instructors got with him really well. He won show jumping class at Sportsman Sales, and then everyone who tried him didn't want to get back on him again. So when I came back in my third year, they created a project horse scheme where the level four riders would school a lower level horse 1 day a week. There were 7 horses, and it said how many hours they could do and what level. It just said Douglas, next to graduate. And they basically gave him to me. I rode him for every lesson. Barely rode another horse that year. He never once tried to get me off. I didn't know all the other things he'd done before. I just knew he'd had the summer off field. So I just lunged him for a week, and then I went to get on him, and the gallery was packed. And I was thinking, raining? I didn't know why, but I was the only student in my course who hadn't fallen off in the first year. So they were waiting to see me fall off. And he behaved impeccably. I mean, he did some scary things, like, so when they stack round bales and pyramids, he was just being a bit of a git in the arena one day, not wanting to halt, not wanting to do anything. So I thought, like, we'll go for a walk around the farm. And then a tractor was coming and I asked him to halt. And because I was asking him to halt again, said he was cross. So he stuck his head in the air and in the dressage saddle went up 3 pyramids high with me on him, perched on top of this round bale. And I'm terrified of heights, terrified. And then it's just like, and came down and got off it and carried on. Like nothing had happened. But he was like the most incredible horse. Like never sat anything like in this country. He just sheen. Like incredible. Always gave confidence you jump it. Yeah.
He was definitely meant to be with you.
And we tried putting the other rider on him, really good rider, because all the girls are starting off. And I'd ridden him for about 6 weeks at that point. I think anyone watching it, Graham literally put his foot in the stirrup, sat down, and gradually stuck his head between his legs and went for it to get him off. Like, just didn't want anyone else to ride him. Until he came away, he'd been with me competing for a while, and my friend Naomi tack him out, and he loved her, his dog with her. But he just didn't suit the environment of being in a college, and he definitely wasn't a sort of anyone. He was awesome. Just no, awesome horse.
Okay, so you're in the island. We've only got a bit of time because I know you've got to get away, haven't you, and get ready. This is just going so quick. We'll have to do this again, Doug.
Yeah.
Because we've just scratched the surface. So where would you like to go? Where do you see yourself heading?
I love training. I love competing as well. Like I said, I put my competing on hold. My horse, Elsa, is in the UK. I moved here with my lovely friends, and she's coming back to me next month. So I will be getting out competing again, which would be great. I think my head with my dad having no colossal business and everything changing, I wasn't in the right place to do it. And now I am. And if I can forge it, I will do more competing again. And just sort of like slowly build, I think, hopefully a good reputation here as well. I don't mind if I just ride young horses the rest of my life, or, you know, help people jump their first little cross-country courses. I just love doing all that stuff. I don't know. I just see where life takes me, really.
You know me, and the people that know me on here know me. So what I'm feeling and what I'm sensing now and what I'm being told to say to you is just have fun with your life. This is a time for doing what you feel is in your heart, for follow your passion, for having fun, and adventurous as well. Because what I see, I'm not a fortune teller, I don't tell futures, but what I get is I get a sense of things. And I feel it's there for you, Doug. Whatever you want to do, as long as you feel that's really what you want to do, it will be successful. Okay, because it's there.
I am a typical Taurian, but if I'm going to do something, I put everything into it.
Yeah.
And if I don't want to do it, I won't do it.
Yeah. But I don't think it's just one thing. So don't pigeonhole yourself, because there's opportunities that are going to come up that have not been presented yet. Okay. And you might normally go no. And what they're saying is start saying yes more often, but give yourself time to think about it, because you can say no later. Say yes, but I need to think about this, because there's opportunities coming up. The next 3 months is going to be a good grounding, which is funny because you're doing groundwork with the horses. So it's not just the horses you're working through, it's yourself. There's going to be a good grounding. And this is going to, I can't think of the word, elevate you. That's not quite the right word. But to the next phase. And it feels exciting.
Transition. Yeah. I actually, because with my dad passing away, I obviously miss him desperately. And he was so supportive. But mum and I were here all the time. When mum was here, I could go out. But I wouldn't have felt right going away for 2 days of teaching. You know, I found it quite hard to do that. And that's the non-horsey influence influencing my horses. But now I feel like I want to do it again. You know, and I think people sometimes don't admit that sometimes you just don't want to do it. There's days you just don't want to.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter, because tomorrow you might want to do it more than you did yesterday.
Yeah. That's why they're saying, if an opportunity comes up, say yes, but you'll have time to think about it.
I'm bad at saying no.
Honestly, that's something I've changed. I don't think, I can't, for all the reasons that everybody else would associate. No, I've stopped saying that, because I'm finding that if I say yes, It's like, okay, you want this, good, we'll send you this then.
That's the thing with the teaching, it's changing how you think. It's not, I'm going to get on, my horse is going to be nice today. I'm going to get on, my horse is going to walk around the arena nice this day. I think it's really important in training and teaching. But I have days where I've gone, what's the point? Lockdown took everything away again. I nearly gave up. I thought, I've worked so hard. And then I told you about the silver feather. So my grandmother, before she died, Phil told me if I need to know if something's right, ask her and she'll bring me a white feather. And she did it all the time. I can't have feathers, so I don't have any feathers in my room, and there'll be a feather on my pillow, or there'll be a feather, like, really weird places. And then the morning I was leaving to come from my friend Liz's to Ireland, I was clearing my car out, and in the runner of my seat there was a silver feather pin. I'm the only person that goes in my car. I don't wear earrings or anything, so I don't know where it came from, how it got there, but it made me think, okay, this is the right thing to do.
That's a lovely story. But like you said, it doesn't matter where it came from. The fact is, you knew that was a sign for you that it's going to be okay.
Still on my car keys now.
Yeah.
I got with me all the time.
Amazing. So, amazing.
And I thought, silver chumps white feather.
Yeah. That's lovely. Oh, right, Doug, it's about 57. You've got to get ready at 8 o'clock.
I have the person.
Yeah, come. And this is Candy.
Yes.
Have a fantastic evening at your gig. And we'll have to do this again if you want to. And then we can chat some more and maybe get some people who can ask some questions. I think I put that on up earlier, Sharon. Talented gentleman, no matter what you do.
I love Sharon. She's amazing. When I first met her, she was like, you tell a slightly rude joke and she'd be like, oh my God. Now she's got the filthiest mind I've ever known. Like, she's hilarious. But I always remember her being so prudish. Now she's like, came to Candy's shows, but she's off.
Yes, because Candy can be a little bit on the cuff sometimes.
I think it just pushes the envelope.
She pushes it. That's what she does. You've got another comment here. It's from Derek. Thanks, Derek.
Thank you.
I see you've got love and support out there, which you've always had, and it's there if you need it. And that's what you know now. You know if it's there.
And I thank everyone that supported me when I was having a tough time without me even knowing it. Thank you. Lots of people did. And did things I didn't even know were happening.
Okay. So say bye to your fans, your friends.
See you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, everybody, for stopping on by and listening to Doug. Bless him. He's such a lovely guy, such a lovely guy. And we've just scratched the surface. And he's going on a gig tonight. So how exciting is that? He's a multi-talented guy. But the best thing, he's got the kindest heart, biggest heart. And even if he's not sure how to deal with something, he tries his best, especially for his clients. You know, he will do his best for his clients and their horses because he generally wants to see them achieve and see that glow on their face, even if it's just around a field. So thank you very much for joining us this evening. And thank you for Doug for joining me too. That was lovely. I'll see you again soon. Bye for now. You've been listening to Ronnie King at Equine Voices. Thank you for listening and speak to you soon.